ever thrown you a curveball that you weren't sure what to do with? You know, the kind where you think, someone should really do something about this. Have you ever thought, maybe that someone is me? And then found yourself on a grand adventure you never saw coming? Me too. As a special needs mom, I have been saddened by what's available to my son. But instead of wallowing in it, I decided to do something about it. Along the way, I'm meeting extraordinary people and having the most wonderful experiences I never thought I'd have. I'm so inspired by what's happening around me that I want to share it all with you. Living Your Legacy is a community where ordinary people who've been called to create something bigger than themselves can come together to be inspired, connect, learn, and live into the legacies they want to see in the world. I'm your host, Michelle Slaney-Travato, and this is the Living Your Legacy podcast. Hello, everybody. Michelle Slaney-Travato here. I want to take a moment to welcome you to another episode of the Living Your Legacy show. On this show, we interview legacy makers, but not the kind you might think of. These are not famous movie stars and rock idols. These are average, ordinary people who could be stood in a line behind you in a grocery store. And we don't know that when they walk out that door, they are literally creating extraordinary legacies. I want to shine a light on them. I also like to talk to the professionals that help support legacy makers achieve their goals, because the reality is none of us does it alone. And last but not least, we talk about ideas for legacy creation, because that is something that some of my viewers have shared that they just sounds great, have no idea what my legacy could be, no idea how to achieve it. So we discuss all those areas. And today, I've got a lady who touches on all three of them. She's touching on some things that are really important to many people, and you can extrapolate from this into your own life as well. If the specific situation isn't yours, we still all know the feelings. So I'd like to take a moment to introduce you to my friend, Melissa Berger. So Melissa's passion is to help parents of autistic children feel fully supported. Oh, doesn't that sound nice? As they go from surviving to thriving without wasting precious time. And let me tell you, I can no longer count the number of hours that I have spent in meetings where I'm like, this has nothing to do with me, but now it's rude for me to stand up and leave, so I'm stuck here. Melissa has had a 30-year executive leadership career with Whole Foods Market. She is also a certified professional coach through the Co-Active Training Institute. Her work focuses on supporting parents of newly diagnosed kids with autism, including a six-month coaching and support program, Thriving with Autism, a comprehensive resource for parents in the first year of diagnosis. Outside of work, Melissa enjoys seeing Broadway shows with her daughter, laughing with her husband, playing pickleball, which is like taking the world by storm, and walking with her beloved golden retriever, Bo. I love that. Welcome to the show, Melissa. So excited to have you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Melissa, I start out every show with the exact same question. And the question is this. When you were in grade four, what did you want to be when you grow up? Because I'm pretty sure a coach for parents of children with autism was not on your radar. So what was it that you wanted to be? And tell us what you did.
So I think I actually had two careers in mind. One of them was being a teacher. And the way that that manifested was, is that I used to find all the biggest, heaviest books I could find in the house. And I remember sitting on the front porch with little stuffed animals or dolls in front of me and a milk crate. And I pretended to be a teacher. And I pretended to look through the books and research and do different things. And when I wasn't in that mode of career, the other mode was to be an architect. And the way that that manifested was that I would take all of the scraps of wood that my father had cut from building a screen porch, and I would use them to lay out Barbie houses. Didn't care much about the Barbies, but loved the actual, like, where does the bed go? Where does all the furniture go? And so I could spend hours doing that. So it was either being a teacher or being an architect, which obviously has not come through. Well, teacher did a little bit, but.
That's funny. And I love those stories of people telling that, and that trip into memory lane is so much fun. So tell us now, what did you do? A little bit about your executive career, and then we'll talk about how you got to what you're doing now.
Sure. So Whole Foods Market, you know, it was a couple of variations along the way. But in the beginning, I started out as a cashier in college. And then after I graduated, I had a degree in management, and I thought, well, this is a really wonderful place to stay. I love the beauty of the stores, and on and on. I worked my way into store leadership, which is the equivalent of store manager. And then from there, I took the leap and moved to Washington, D.C., and spent 6 years running the human resources team. So covering payroll, workers' comp, all the things, learning and development. And then funny enough, my husband and I were dating long distance, and it got to the point that one of us needed to move. So I moved back to Boston, and at that point, jumped back into the store level of operations and started working in learning and development. So I was training and teaching, doing orientations, doing all sorts of different stuff. But the biggest part that I loved was identifying people who had major talent but didn't necessarily see their talent, and drawing them out and encouraging them to really pursue leadership opportunities in the company.
Oh, I love that. So often you hear the opposite of that, that people are talented and nobody cares and they're never given an opportunity. So I love that that was the role you took. That's pretty amazing. And of course, over the course of your journey with Whole Foods, you had a variety of different roles. But what led you to start thinking about working with families with autism?
Well, there's nothing like hearing that diagnosis one for your family. You know, my daughter was having a very difficult time. We were struggling to figure out what was going on. And ultimately, she met with a couple of psychologists who came back to us and said, we're going to put a diagnosis of autism on the table. And no parent is prepared to hear that. I felt like I had been punched in the stomach. And so that began my quest of trying to navigate and figure out and work through all of the details and manage all of the doctor's appointments and figure out all the things while trying to help her, although she adjusted better than I did to the diagnosis, to be honest. But really just working hard to figure out how to navigate all of this and doing it on my own, completely 100% on my own.
Yeah, I know a lot of parents feel similarly. And I think regardless of what diagnosis you get, I think people just do feel very alone right out of the gate, because this is a whole new world for most of us. It's not something we know a great deal about. And so now all of a sudden we're inundated with information. There is a high expectation that we are going to spend hours and hours and hours and hours combing through websites and phone calls and Zoom meetings to try and get to some answers. And then, of course, all of this is while you're grappling with the fact that, okay, so what I thought my child's life was going to look like is probably not what my child's life is going to look like. And what my life as a parent is going to look like, what I thought it was going to be, and now what it is. You're also grappling with the reactions of people around you to that diagnosis. You know, your community, your extra family members, moms, dads, brothers, sisters, cousins, right? You got all these people who often will chime in with their opinions on what's going on for your child or what you should do, whether they have experience or knowledge or not. So you've got, you're being bombarded from everywhere, but you still feel very alone because you have to be the one to make decisions. We as parents make decisions for our small children, and we, you know, there's the average, they need to be fed and they need to be clothed and they need their diapers changed. But in addition to that, now, for those of us with kids with disabilities, there are, okay, how many doctors are going to be involved? Are these doctors actually communicating with each other? How do I ask them to define the words they're using? Because I've either never heard of them or I've never heard of them used this way. How do I tell the difference between, you know, this means this and it could impact your child in 75 different ways, but they can't tell you which way it will. So how do I navigate that? And then beyond the medical system, how many therapists now are going to be involved? How do I find them? How do I know if they're any good at what they do? Because I'm not, this is not my world. I've never been here before. How do I, you know, get support from myself? How do I navigate how I feel about all this? Like, there's so many things. And it's literally, it starts the moment diagnosis happens. And it is so overwhelming and so lonely. So tell us a little about your journey now. I just wanted to paint a picture for people. If this is not their realm, this is not their sphere, what this is kind of like. And if you're feeling overwhelmed just hearing me talk about it, you have a sense of how this feels in reality. But tell us now about your experience. Like, what was it? How did it go for you?
So, I mean, so much of what you just said resonates for me. Initially, I actually didn't do a lot of research. I felt like I wanted to go into this and I wanted to support my daughter without a lot of outside noise, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. I wanted to just focus on trying to help her get the support that she needed. But unfortunately, I ran into lots of roadblocks in the sense that I couldn't get a cohesive care team together. And so I would be, because of course, autism, like many things, comes with co-occurring diagnoses. And so there would be things that would come up with her and we would be trying to figure out what they were and what they looked like. And we'd be sent to one specialist and then that specialist would meet with her. And, you know, suffice it to say that taking an autistic child into a doctor's appointment is loaded with challenges, whether it's sensory issues because of the noises, the smells, the bright lights, whatever it happens to be. So as a parent, trying to maintain your own stress level and trying to keep yourself calm and grounded so that that energy shifts to your child is enough. And then also, you know, trying to advocate for your child during the appointment so that just the success of the appointment is possible. For me and for us, I found the biggest challenge is that we dealt with a situation in a hospital where everything was very siloed. So the doctors weren't speaking to each other. There was not a lot of communication. In many cases, we went into appointments and I felt like, you haven't even read her file. You don't even know that she's autistic.
Right.
And that leads to real challenges because they don't handle themselves in a way. And I'm not even actually sure, to be honest, some of the medical community knows quite how to handle an autistic child. And I don't say that with malice. I just think that generally speaking, the public at large doesn't understand enough. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to focus on. Mm-hmm. Through my program. But so, you know, we would go down these different pathways. And the reality of it is that we went to therapy appointments. I remember going to one in particular with her. And the therapist was not prepared to deal with a child her age. And so it was like an instant failure. And it continued to be a failure. We went two or three times. I can't remember exactly. I kind of blocked it all out. Mm-hmm. And it was an epic failure. And so then I had to go back to the drawing board and go back to the pool of resources and try to find another therapist. And guess what? Mm-hmm. They weren't close. They were 45 miles away. So mm-hmm. I would have to drive my daughter down to the therapy appointment on a Monday morning at 9:30 in the height of traffic, sit in the car or go inside and wait for her and then come out and then drive her back, get her to school and then start my workday. Not a really easy reality. In fact, mm-hmm. I was very fortunate because I had a boss that was flexible and would work with me. But, you know, had she not been, I would have had to stop working mm-hmm. in the early days of this diagnosis. So I had to put my head down and kind of put my own feelings on the back burner. And I don't know that that's necessarily the healthiest way to deal with it, but for me, it was what I did in the moment. And what I wouldn't have given to have someone there to sort of talk to me and listen and to say, I know this feels really hard. I know that, you know, it's really a lot. And I know that you are dealing with so many things that you never thought you'd have to deal with. I mean, never mind the insurance companies. I mean, forget about that whole routine. And so, you know, to have somebody there to be sort of a sounding board and a guide would have just been unbelievably helpful.
Mm-hmm. I guess I couldn't agree more. My son does not happen to have autism, but we are transitioning him from the childhood system to the adult system in Canada. And it is very similar in that we are now dealing with multiple organizations who don't communicate with each other, who are very siloed off. They're aware of each other, but, you know, they can't help me. Like, I don't understand why I need to do this for you or I need to do that for them. How come it can't be the same thing? They have no answer, right? Or everybody needs me to get forms signed by my family doctor that he charges for. I'm like, can I just use one form for everybody? Because it becomes cost prohibitive. Or, you know, intake applications that are complicated and difficult and you don't fully understand the question. So you don't know, or the answers are unclear. Like, well, it could be this, it could be that, which one? And then, you know, you're waiting for hours on the phone to talk to somebody to just get an answer to, you know, question 3C on the application. And I'm like, I wish there was someone that I could just call, like a friend, I could text and say, oh my gosh, what do I do with this? And how do I handle this? What's the right answer here? How do I phrase this? How do I, you know, what strategy do you have for getting all these medical forms filled out? Just things like that, that would be so helpful, would take so much pressure off, would alleviate so much time wasted in trying to like figure it all out and reading complicated government websites. I don't know if anybody's ever read one of them, but they're not easy. And then, you know, you click and you think you're in the right space and you go down this rabbit hole quite a ways only to find, yeah, this isn't it. So you had to back out and try down another one. And again, it's all hours and hours of time that who has to be able to do these things to just achieve often one small piece of a goal, not the whole goal. And so I totally understand those feelings as well. Like that just speaks right into my life when my son was young and again now as he's transitioning the second time. And that wish that thing is didn't have to be so hard. I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of, well, you know, miscommunication, misinformation, medical doctors. I mean, it's hard to keep up with all the changes in terminology and, you know, autism used to be autism. Now it's a spectrum. And so how do you keep up with how that impacts people from a medical professional, specifically from their perspective? How do you even keep up with that? So, you know, I'm not blaming them for not necessarily knowing all the ins and outs of it. I think it's a complicated and difficult thing all the way around. But in particular, it impacts parents the most because as the caregiver, we literally are where the rubber meets the road. And I think people forget that a tire becomes bald after a while. That it literally loses its tread without use, from overuse. And I think people forget that as caregivers, we get to that place too, where I've said it, if I have to think about one more thing, I think my head's going to explode. And not in a good way, like those mind blown moments where it's awesome. No, not that. Like, I really think my head is going to explode. I cannot retain one more piece of information. I can't have another question. I need some answers. I need something clear. I need something specific for my child and I need it quick. And I feel that so much. And again, because as parents, you may not know somebody else whose child has those diagnoses. I understand my son is a cluster of disabilities. I understand in the world, there are other children like him. I have never met one. Not one family who can say, oh my gosh, your kid is pretty much the same as mine. They've got this and this and this. Yeah, never. I've met people who are like, oh, my child has that piece. I'm like, so I'll connect with you on that. You know, oh, my child has this piece. I'll connect with you on that. Right. So it's so challenging all the way around. So here you are in the thick of all this. You're adjusting to this new life as a parent, adjusting to this new life as a parent of a child with a disability that now needs to function in the world differently. you're adjusting to, I'm going to have to change up my whole life, how I do everything. And I'm going to have to become an advocate, which most of us don't ever expect we would have to do. And I have to do all of this kind of yesterday so I can help my child today and tomorrow. So there you are. What happened next?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's okay to do this, but a quick story. So the advocating piece, I think, was developed in an early point. My grandmother was a quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother, from a very early, when I remember, you know, being 5, 6, 7 years old in the parking lots with her and the people that would just willy-nilly park in the handicap accessible spaces.
They still do. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. And so she had these flyers that she would have me stick on the windshields. And she taught me from a very early age. Yeah, she was a pistol. She taught me from a very early age that you have to go after what you want. Like, you know, all kinds of different examples. And I think that translated over into my situation with my daughter. And so I learned the art of being incredibly pushy and incredibly persuasive with a smile on my face and as kind as I could be and as appreciative as I could be, because I knew that the way in was not to make people not like me. And I don't mean that they liked me, but I just mean that they would hear my name on the other end of the phone call and be like, oh yeah, and then put me on, you know, permahold. And so I worked really hard to try to make everyone feel as supported and as respected and as appreciated as I could so that I could find the resources for my daughter. And that advocacy, you know, continued. And it was tricky sometimes because she would look at me and say, don't say anything, don't say anything, don't say anything. And I would be like, I need to say something because I need to stop whatever's happening, because I'm sorry, I get to deal with the aftermath. I get to deal mm-hmm. with you when you melt down because you have totally overdone, you know, you're overdone. You're cooked from the experience. Mm-hmm. So there was always a tightrope of trying, and there still is, frankly, a tightrope of trying to figure out how to advocate, but at the same time, how to honor agency for her.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for being a part of the Living Your Legacy podcast community in 2022. We can honestly say 2023 is going to be an exciting year. We've got some new things going on that we'd like to share with you. The Living Your Legacy podcast is now offering advertising spots. We found many entrepreneurs spent lots of money on advertising last year, only to find that they weren't falling in front of their ideal audience. We'd love to help you get your message out. Let's discuss this. Click the link in the show notes to book a time to chat and see if this could be a good fit for you. To circle back to something you said there in the advocacy piece, because I think it goes against what people think advocacy is or how to advocate. Certainly, if you go on social media and you look at TV shows, the push is to be aggressive, verbally aggressive, physically aggressive, that this is going to get you what you want. You will get to the front of the line. You will get the best services. You will get whatever you want if you are unpleasant, for lack of a better word. If you are divisive, if you are aggressive, particularly with your words, if you're very threatening, if you don't do this, I'll sue or whatever. And I think we need to address that, because the truth, I can see you giggling. The truth of the matter is that it works sometimes. Sometimes it does. And there are places and times where you may need to escalate to that. But if that's the place that you put your toe as the starting line for the race, you literally have nowhere to go once you're there. There's no, well, reputation moves faster than you do. It does. In all workplaces, we know the workplace bully. Everybody knows that person that you just got to avoid. Like, you just, if you see them coming, you make yourself busy, you get lost, you vamoose, you put your head down, you are suddenly have to pee, whatever it is, you get you out of there as fast as you can because you know the situation isn't going to go well. Well, let's translate that over to being a parent of a special needs child. If that's you, how do you expect people to say, want to be your therapist, to work with your child and communicate with you? How do you say, want your child's teachers to engage with you? And by extension, your child. How do you want this to all go? If you come in the door on meeting number one as that very aggressive person that social media and TV shows and the news shows you will work all the time, you are actually setting your child up to fail. Now that's heavy. So let's talk a little about this. Why did you decide to do this? I heard you say with a smile on my face, and I was persistent, but I was polite. Why? Why would you choose to go that route? Because that takes thought and preparation. So why would you do that?
Okay. So going back to my retail days, I worked in customer service for a long time. And I stood there and listened to people come after me because things weren't the way they expected to. They had been overcharged. They didn't like the way somebody talked to them. I mean, you pick the reason why they were at the booth and they were in my face telling me exactly. And I always struggled so hard because of all the things you just said to interact with the people that were like rabid dogs. I mean, they just made me want to say, okay, nothing. You get nothing. Whereas if somebody came up and they were calm and polite and they explained their situation, I went out of my way to help them because mm-hmm. I saw that they were managing their frustration. I don't know that I was intellectualizing that, but I recognized that they were just staying calm. And so it was so much easier to support them and help them. And so I went out of my way to do that. So flip that over to my daughter's situation and all of the doctors. I think by nature, conflict isn't necessarily my favorite thing in the world. And so mm-hmm. if I can backdoor it and if I can, you know, be nice and polite, but everything you just said, as far as, you know, these are people that are going to be interacting with my daughter. And if I make them angry or if I make them feel short, you know, shorted, or I don't let them know how much I appreciate them, that's going to reflect on how they treat my daughter. And mm-hmm. I can't in good conscience do that because I want the best for my kid. You know, I don't want anybody who's going to treat her poorly because of me. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I don't escalate when I need to. That doesn't mean when I'm on the phone with the insurance company and I'm not getting what I need, I don't say, can I speak to your supervisor, please? Mm-hmm. And then I wait, you know, for the supervisor. But at the same time, I do that. But I also, just yesterday, I wrote a long email to one of the people at my daughter's insurance company, our insurance company, because they helped me figure out how to get something covered as in-network coverage versus out-of-network, saving us thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote this email to this person's supervisor, and I got an email back saying, oh my God, you made my day. I don't get these emails very often. And you're right, this person is amazing. And I want to make sure that people know it. And may I escalate your email to the next level? And I was like, you do anything you want, because she was amazing. Mm-hmm. So I just see, and part of that also comes from somebody that I worked for when I was a teenager and babysitting, who taught me the power of a thank you note. Mm-hmm. And so I've always feel like it is, you can get so much further if you're kind and nice than you can if you're aggressive and if you look like you're out for a fight. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. And I want my daughter to have the best experience. So I'm going to be my best person to help her get that.
I literally love everything you just said. And I too have a story, and I love it when people share stories. So again, I think about that as well. How do I want my son's life to go? Because I may very well be very aggressive and get something for him. Now I'm talking about out of the gate, not a situation that's escalated. I'm walking in the door and I'm like, I want this for him, or I want him to have access to that. I can choose, right, how I'm going to engage. And honestly, you're absolutely right. I have been connected with so many extraordinary people because people know extraordinary people. You know, we were connected with some of the best doctors in our province because we had a relationship, an ongoing, amazing relationship with our pediatrician. And the things that she would say to us is, well, there are these doctors, but if it was my child, I would send them to this one. And that's who I'm sending you to. And I made sure those doctors knew that that had been said to me, that my pediatrician said this about you. And I watched doctors turn purple and they weren't sure what to do. And they were very funny. But I wanted them to know that that's why I was there. And just that compliment, I mean, literally everybody in the world feels overworked and undervalued. And to have somebody out of the blue value you makes such an incredible difference. I watched their body language change. I watched their facial expressions change. And you know, when I had questions, I got really good answers. And guess what? I got connected on to amazing people, right? So again, not saying that there's not a time or place to be aggressive, but it's not a good starting place in the race of life that is for your child. Like, it just isn't. You got a marathon to run. You don't want to run the whole thing angry. Mm-hmm. You just don't, right? And again, there are people who have gone above and beyond for my son. We had a situation a few years back. Both of my children were on a train, a public transit train. And a gentleman was sitting in the designated handicapped seat. He did not appear to have a physical disability that would require him to have that seat. My son does have a physical disability, and so he makes a beeline for that seat. Now, he didn't say anything. I wasn't there. And so I was getting this from the respite worker that was with my children. And he didn't say anything, but apparently he got kind of close. And he was looking out the window and kind of looking at the guy. And it's a grown man in his 40s who shoved him on the ground. Was shocking to everybody there. Of course, in shock, people often freeze. What was really cool about that experience, and why would you ever, Michelle, say something was cool about that? It wasn't that he had this negative experience. It's how the community rallied around my children immediately after it. This young woman, who was probably 21, 22, came out of nowhere on this train, and she was so mad with that man. And she told him off left, right, and center, call the police, call the train police. Like, she just was like, you have no right to do that. While three or four other women collected up both my children, gave up their seats, sat my children down, and stood in a protective row in front of them. And I thought, well, that's really awesome. So awesome that these women stepped up. But the story doesn't end there. The young lady who spoke to that gentleman wanted to make sure that my kids were okay. This was really important to her, and asked for my phone number. The respite worker asked me, told me what was happening, asked me if it was okay. I passed it on. No problem. This girl called me and she was like, I just want to know, like, this was awful. I mean, it wasn't as awful as that. He wasn't injured. He was just scared. But she just was so kind. And then she called me back and informed me that she worked for Best Buy and wanted to know if we would bring our children in, because she wanted them to know, this was her perspective, that although there are some nasty things in the world is a wonderful place. And so she wanted to replace this nasty experience with some stranger kindness. And we said, oh, sure, we'll come in. Like, that's really sweet. You don't have to do that. What we didn't know was that she had spoken to her manager and general manager. She had arranged for some of the local cell phone provider people to come in. Like, there was a whole thing. We had a private tour of the store, including the back room and the elevators and all that kind of fun stuff. And every person who was there had a gift bag of gifts for my children. They got each of them free tablets. They got like 2 years worth of school supplies. It was actually overwhelmingly positive, this experience that they had. And I know both of them remember it. So what did I do with all that? Well, I found out that the CEO of Best Buy is a woman. And I thought, she needs to know what this extraordinary young girl did for my family, how she rallied these perfect strangers around us. And so I sent her a thank you card and a mug that had the word gratitude on it for having employees like this in her company. I didn't expect I would hear anything. I just wanted her to know. But I did get a call from, they have an internal magazine, and they wanted to do an interview with this girl, and they wanted to know if I would be a part of it and share my story. And so I said, absolutely, I will. So they interviewed me, and we didn't tell the girl that she was going to be in it. And when the magazine came out, as a former teacher, I have a lot of students, former students who were in this company. Well, of course, they all knew who we were, and this girl, and she was so touched. And I thought, again, she didn't have to do anything, nothing. She didn't have to step up to help my child on the train. She didn't have to take it to her boss. She didn't have to do any of these things, but she's just so wonderful and incredible. I wanted her to know. And, you know, we go back to that Best Buy to purchase from them, and they know us when we go in, and it's really lovely. So again, what we put out in the world comes back to us in a wide variety of ways. And when we put out, and from that perspective, kindness, when we say thank you to medical professionals or the people who support us, when we send that thank you card, when we, you know, write a review or things like that, that is positive, we actually forward things quicker. We get, as you said, better service. We get people willing to go that extra mile because they're like, these people are awesome. I want to work with them. So now they're going to go and do more research and homework, and they're going to go look at things differently to see if they can better help you. And isn't that what we want for our children? More people to step up and say, not only do I like this kid, but I really like this family around this child. So there's so much benefit to that. And nobody teaches us how to do that. Unless you happen to know you or know me, or you happen to hear this podcast, you might not have known this. And our instinct, of course, is to be mama bear and protect and defend. And so the instinct may be to be aggressive about things, but we need to temper that with the long view. And I totally understand what you're saying there. So you did all of this, you're doing this. What prompted you to step into this new business to do that?
Well, it was twofold. My career at Whole Foods Market was winding down. I read the writing on the wall. I knew that something was changing. And so I had wanted to become a coach for about 6 years before that. And it just one of those timing things, couldn't quite make it all work. So I suddenly said, self, this is the time to get moving. And so I started my training, and sure enough, I was laid off. And so I just continued and it, you know, got the training, got the certification. And then I had the idea of, all right, where am I going to focus? What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I didn't want to be an executive coach. I didn't want to be a life coach because I didn't know that anybody really understood what that meant. And I'm not knocking life coaches. Please don't hear that. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to do something that mattered and something that I could make a difference. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, why don't I work with parents of autistic children so that they don't have to sort of fight through the muck the way I did? And so that's where it sprang from. And so I just, you know, I had a conversation with my daughter and I said, how do you feel about this? And she said, I think it's important. And I said, okay. And I said, you know, I recognize that my story doesn't exist without yours, but I also understand that, you know, there's some element of privacy for you. So I, you know, I'll do my very best to not name you. I will always refer to you as my daughter. And she said to me the other day, she's like, you don't have to do that. You can let it rip if you want to. But I really, I didn't want to go forward without including her in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And so that led to really sitting and figuring out, like, what are the things that you really need to know when you're first stepping out in this journey? And there are really practical things that you need, but then there are also things you need, like support and a non-judgmental community where you can interact with other parents, because that was something I didn't have. Mm-hmm. I had no way to connect. I tried some of the Facebook groups. They weren't my cup of tea, you know, there was a lot of, I don't know how to describe it other than a lot of victim kind of stuff. And I was like, I'm not a victim. This is not a terrible thing. We are going to get through this and we're going to be better because of it, because we've experienced it. And so I wanted to keep a really positive spin. So, you know, creating that community. And then, of course, you know, taking my expertise with coaching and using that to help parents through the emotional challenge. Mm-hmm. And so it was a multi-pronged thing of what can I give you that's like, you can hold it in your hand and it's tangible. Mm-hmm. What can I give you for a community? And then what can I give you for you? Wow. And that's where it developed from.
That's so beautiful. I really love that, that instead of being angry about not having the supports, your response to this was, how can I support other people so that they can have an easier time? They can navigate this quicker. They can get the supports that they need for their child, for themselves, the information they need, and of course, support each other. It's not just a one-way street. So tell us about what it is that you do. How have you structured it?
Sure. So the program is called Driving with Autism. And there are 6 modules. And so basically someone, you know, decides that they want to start the program with me. One of the modules is about mastering the practicalities. So that's really like the brass tacks. That's how do you find the therapist? What are some good questions to ask to vet the therapist and so on? Along with managing the insurance company, because I'm sure that it's a little bit different in Canada versus in the States, but you know, it's a process and there's a lot of paperwork and there's a lot of kind of, you know, even just organizing the paperwork, which sounds really silly, but it's a reality that you have to figure out how to create systems to keep track of stuff. Mm-hmm. Then we jump into something that you touched on earlier, which is the family and friends piece and how to get the support that you crave, because, you know, parents, grandparents don't always understand. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they say, nah, that's nothing. Or I was like that or whatever. And it, you know what? Very possibly you were like that because we know that autism is genetic. And so it's just figuring out how do you get that support? And then what do you do when someone who you thought was a big support in your life suddenly is like, I'm all set. I don't know what to do with this. I'm going to just step away. Mm-hmm. And that's heartbreaking. And so trying to find ways to support that as well. Mm-hmm. Then the modules move into looking at how to master keys of having more good days, because, you know, it's challenging and there's a lot going on and there are meltdowns to contend with and there's all sorts of different things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And so finding ways to support with that. And then also, you know, real fundamentals, how to go to an appointment with your child and how to set them up for success. Mm-hmm. So whether it's an IEP meeting, if they need to be there, or an advanced education plan, that is, or maybe it's a doctor's appointment, or maybe it's a therapy appointment, mm-hmm. or whatever it is, but being able to set your child up so that they can maximize, or even getting a haircut. I mean, there are just so many things and so many places that you and I might take for granted as to what's going to happen and how it's going to go. But for our children, it's a whole different experience. Safety is one of the components, because unfortunately, while I was developing this program, there was a little boy in our community who wandered off on a Sunday afternoon from his grandfather and actually drowned. And you know, that made me say, oh my gosh, there's a level of safety here that every parent has to be aware of, but then you have to sort of maximize it or exponentially increase it so that you're looking out for your autistic child, whether it's you know, the running away or, you know, not recognizing the signs of danger, even interacting for older kids, interacting with police and understanding that they're there to help, but sometimes it doesn't feel like that. And mm-hmm. so, or being known, you know, one of the women that I spoke to when I was doing my research said, I actually had to go to the police station and talk to them about my son so that if they got called to the house, they would know what to do instead of just reacting like they would with anybody else. Mm-hmm. And then finally, focusing on fostering and building stamina and confidence and resilience for the parents, because, you know, there are days that it's just, I mean, you talked about it, it's really hard and mm-hmm. it's hard to believe that it's going to be better, and it does get better. It will get better because with more information, your perspective shift, and with more understanding, your perspective shift, and also with more experience with your child, you start to realize where are the places that I need to be careful and where are the places that I know I'm potentially going to run into trouble if I push too hard in that direction. Mm-hmm. And so it's all encompassing, you know, it's really trying to look at the bigger picture. But then along with all of that is a weekly session in a group coaching environment where you get to come in and say, this happened last night and I am at my wit's end. And amongst the group, maybe there's a solution or maybe I have a suggestion based on experience, but it's that groupthink moment of, oh my gosh, this is really hard. Can my people just be with me? Mm-hmm. You know, can I get some space with people that understand?
Oh, I love everything you said. It's so a holistic approach to all the different pieces. That's beautiful. And I do know that you have a freebie for our guests. So tell us a little bit about the freebie that you got.
Sure. So it's a workbook essentially that's designed to help you manage meltdowns. Now, to be clear, meltdowns and tantrums are two different things. And a meltdown is about overload and it's about maxing out the nervous system and not being able to handle anything else. And so essentially, an autistic child will shut down. And so this workbook is designed to help you recognize what's going on, to help you find solutions and resources for how to maybe shift it. And then some, what I like to call sometimes Monday morning quarterbacking, where you go back and you think about what was going on. And often it's not one trigger. Often it's a compilation of things, but to just recognize that it does get better and your skills for handling it will get better. And there's lots of tips and lots of suggestions. And there's lots of places to sort of get a notebook and make some notes for yourself so that you can think about things.
Well, I love that. So tell us now, if somebody was interested in that, where would they find it?
So you can go directly to my website, which is Melissa K, middle initial K, Berger.com. Mash it all into one word, MelissaKBerger.com. And right away, you're going to get a pop-up box and you click on that and then you fill out your information. And then within about 2 or 3 minutes, boom, it's going to be in your mailbox and you can open it up and work your way through it. Also, I do want to say that if anybody is listening and they have questions or they just want to have somebody listen, you can reach out to me through the website also and set up time to talk with me. There's a Calendly link so that you can, you know, make an appointment, and I am happy to visit with you and answer a question or two and see what I can do to help support you.
Oh, you are just the bestest. I absolutely love that. And I'm sure that there are people who were listening to this, that this resonates into their lives, that they've been wishing for what we've both wished for. And then they're like, oh, this person, she might actually have some of the solutions to what I'm looking for. So if this is resonating with you folks, Melissa really is this nice off air as well as on air. I highly recommend checking out the workbook, connecting with her to see, you know, if you guys could be a good fit, if she's got some ideas or suggestions to be a part of her community. That would be an amazing opportunity for people to seek and get the support that they really need. Melissa, I have so enjoyed talking to you. The reality is that not only are you creating a legacy life for yourself and your daughter, but you're looking to take as many people with you as possible, which is an extraordinary legacy in and of itself. And I so appreciate that you shared that with me and that now you're sharing it with our audience. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It's such a delight. I mean, you and I had a great conversation prior to this, and it's so wonderful to connect with somebody who gets it, you know, and that's what I'm trying to offer people is a connection with somebody who understands. So thank you very much.
You are so welcome. So folks, reach out and connect with Melissa, check out her website, go grab your freebie, and hopefully you can find an easier way to navigate this role and world of ours. And as always, I end every call by saying, Melissa and I do believe you are awesome. Go start living your legacy today. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please submit a rating and review and share it with a friend. Together, we can inspire more people to start living their legacy too. And let's keep the conversation going. We would love to hear all about your journey in living your legacy and support you along the way. Join our Facebook community, Living Your Legacy Podcast, where we connect, collaborate, and celebrate each other. Can't wait to see you there.